Paul Hergenrother is from the University of Illinois. He's our favorite chemistry professor. Paul, thanks for joining us again. You're on the air. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. U of I's program has been in the news for a couple of reasons this week. Our friend Steve Bertrand talked a little bit about it with one of your colleagues on Chicago's Afternoon News yesterday. What is the positivity rate on campus at the U of I right now?
It's quite low right now, below 0.1% daily. We had maybe 9 positives on 10,000 tests last Thursday, for example, and just single-digit positives since then. So we're quite pleased with how things are going right now.
And when you do find somebody with a positive test, I know we've had this conversation before, but I don't think there's any harm in hearing it again. When somebody tests positive, what happens?
They get contacted immediately within 30 minutes of us getting the result. They're contacted and given instructions about how to isolate. They can move to an isolation dorm if that is appropriate, depending on their living situation. And the key in all of this is identifying. This test is quite sensitive and can identify people before they're infectious. So ideally pull them out of whatever environment they're in, safely isolate them and prevent them from spreading it.
How long then are they quarantined?
We just follow the public health guidelines, which is, basically a couple weeks.
And is this true that because you're testing so often, you're catching a lot of asymptomatic spreaders, people who might otherwise be spreading the disease, you're catching them pretty quickly, aren't you?
Yeah. And I think as we've talked about, the real insidious thing about COVID is that so many people are asymptomatic, 50%, which sounds good, but those are really the ones that contribute to the spread because they don't know they're spreading it. They don't even know they have it and they can spread it. And then those people can get very, very sick. So that was the idea at the very beginning. Test everybody frequently. Many of our undergrads are being tested 3 times a week. And then when positives do come up, we can isolate them and that can really drive down overall positivity.
This is in the Tribune today. At its flagship campus, where about 40,000 students returned for fall classes, undergraduates were tested at least twice a week, and in-person faculty and staff also took weekly tests. Is that still true? 40,000 kids and twice a week?
Oh, yeah. Yep. And as I mentioned, many undergrads are actually on 3 times a week, depending on their risk factor and if there's been positives near them. I'm teaching in person, and so I get tested twice a week as well. I have to show my app to get in the building that I teach in. And it's been great. I gotten emails from my students saying how grateful they are to have in-person classes. They have friends at the University of Michigan or at other places where they're really not having in-person classes. So it's great that we can offer those here because of this.
And this is all predicated on that saliva test where they drool into the tube, drop it off. It gets tested and the turnaround is very quick.
That's right.
Why isn't everybody else doing that? We've had this conversation before too, but actually more and more people are trying to mimic what you do, right?
Yeah, it's expanding and rapidly, and maybe you saw the announcement yesterday that we did receive emergency use authorization from the FDA, which will really help it expand. But, within the state, there's 26 to 30 institutions using it, and outside Illinois, there's about 30 other universities already using it. There's multiple companies and K-12 schools and municipalities. So it's starting to represent a sizable fraction of the overall testing in the U.S. A couple other countries, New Zealand has adopted it, the Philippines. So it is being used, I think, as people understand all the benefits.
Well, what's unique about it? I mean, we all understand testing, and then if you have it, then don't go out. What's novel about yours?
Well, I mean, the simplicity of it, really, and the lack of invasiveness. The original nasal pharyngeal swabs were very uncomfortable and invasive. And then the process in the laboratory is very much simplified. We skip one problematic step that is common to the other test, which is called RNA isolation. Because of that, we can do it faster and way cheaper.
Who came up with that system?
We worked very hard in the spring. I led the team that developed the test in May. Really, we gave ourselves about 6 weeks to develop this, recognizing that we needed to have a very simple process that we could do on scale as we wanted to do 10,000 a day. So kind of the standard methods that were out there. you know, doing a test that costs $150 or something like that on 10,000 a day would not be tractable or feasible, and we needed a quick turnaround. And it's just been an amazing effort here on campus now with, you know, a couple hundred people involved in a whole group that stood up our CLIA lab where we do the testing. So it's been an amazing partnership.
What does it cost per test now?
It's about $20 to $30 a test.
Are you kidding? And you're doing two or three tests per student, 40,000 kids every week, plus the faculty gets tested every week?
That's right.
So what kind of dollars are we talking about here?
I think they say they're spending about $1 million a week on it.
And what price your health, huh? I mean, that's just the way it's got to be, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's the way it's got to be. And really, you know, we know from all of this now, a year into this, that the students aren't super vulnerable when they get sick. Of course, we want to prevent them from getting it, but really a key part of all of this is prevent it to spreading to the community, right? Like once it spreads to people that are older, that's when you really get into problems. And so we've been really, really happy that we have not seen that as per our public health. You know, we haven't seen that spread to people in the community. And so, yeah, it's kind of that cost is, you know, I guess in our opinion, a small price to pay.
Who pays that, by the way? Do the students or do you, where did you get, where do you get $50 million?
the university is covering that cost.
Big school, I guess. So the U of I, hundreds of what's the budget for the University of Illinois? Do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head. But
what do you mean you don't know? You know everything.
it's substantial. But yeah. I think with the EUA, the governor announced that they were releasing $20 million in CARES Act funding to implement this test at other public universities throughout the state. So that was really great to see as well.
So then how practical do you think that is for us to implement something like that on a very local level, like the second biggest school district in the United States in Chicago or the third biggest in Aurora, I think it is? I mean, could high schools do something like this?
Yeah. Yeah, so the Deerfield District 109 up there north of Chicago has adopted it. They're starting it here in Champaign-Urbana. That will be started pretty soon. The Baltimore School Districts is adopting it. So, you know, those places are identifying community partners to pay for it.
Yeah.
And working with our partners at Shield Illinois and Shield T3 to stand up the testing and do it. So it's all just a matter of, you know, there's a lot of logistics to coordinate.
Well, what is this FDA approval then? You've been doing this all year long. What are we waiting for, and how does anything change?
Yeah, it's authorization. So during a pandemic, you know, they'll authorize different things, just like the vaccines are authorized and now our tests. You're right in that for our campus, for us, it really changes very little. We've been doing it under a mechanism called a LDT, a laboratory developed test. But having the EUA makes it a lot easier to expand it to other places. It gives our partners additional assurance. Some places, some companies, some schools were waiting for the EUA before adopting it. So that hurdle has now been cleared.
Last thing, though, your students are still, when they go into the classroom, and they are going into the classroom, right?
Yep.
There are they wearing a mask?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, is there a common area for the students? Are the cafeterias open?
I think a lot of that is kind of in the grab and go mode.
Right.
I think it's been identified that eating is, you know, eating in groups without masks, obviously that is, we know that from indoor dining, that's not great. So they've been trying to mitigate that. But yeah, in classrooms, like, you know, I taught this organic chemistry this morning and then I'm wearing a mask. My students are wearing a mask. We all show the app to get into the building and that's how it works. But, you know, it's better than Zooming all day.
That's the last thing I wanted to touch on, though. I think the other thing besides the efficiency and just the science in it is the fact that the kid doesn't get in the building if they can't demonstrate that they've been tested in the last 3 days, right?
That's exactly right. Yep. And so that frequency is great. And, you know, our athletic department is testing all our athletes every day with it. And that has really kept, the very few times they've seen positives, they can isolate those people. And you'll notice that our people have not been on any COVID shutdowns. And, you know, I know the athletic department really attributes that to having this very sensitive test that is above and beyond the kind of Big Ten mandated antigen test.
It's nice to talk to you today, Paul. I know you're always busy and you've always given us a lot of time. We've got a lot of University of Illinois families and parents listening, and I think if my kid was going to that school and they heard you once in a while on the radio, I would feel very good about it. So thanks for what you're doing down there.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.